minutes, 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here. Today I'm presenting a replay of an audio conversation that I had with Patrick Armstrong, who runs the Vetted podcast, and with Nicole Sackage, who has helped me on a number of UFO projects, including one that we're working on right now, a movie called The Aviary, and we also worked on a book together on triangles. The conversation that you're about to hear is part one of a conversation that took place, and it has to do with crashed flying saucers. It has to do with what's called the gifting field. It has to do with Tim Taylor, who's a NASA engineer who notoriously has been involved with crashed material. I've told a story about the gifting field a number of times, so whether there's more than one gifting field or what actually happened. A friend of mine, Mark Olson, told me the story, provided me photographs of a dig that Tim Taylor had been on with him and with others. And so I've got the photographs of the site, of the material, some of the material that was recovered. And even though I told the story 20 times, there's still a lot of confusion. So this conversation is the first part of my encounter with Tim Taylor. And both Nicole and Patrick asked questions, trying to clarify for themselves what actually happened. In part two, I will be doing an extended conversation about the cover-up, Tim Taylor, and the other parts of the conversation that I had with him, which are much more important than the crash flying saucer stuff. So today, you hear the first hour of the conversation that we had, and I hope you enjoyed. I'm sure most people do, because most people like the whole story about crash flying saucers and these sort of things.
Hey, Nicole.
I'm actually trying to join on my laptop instead of on my phone. So I might leave and come back if that's okay.
Of course. Absolutely. I totally get what you're trying to do. I've been there.
Well, I was trying to open the link on my laptop and it wouldn't open. So I thought I would resend it to myself and try that.
That's so weird. And
Grant's always late. So give
it. No, he's here.
I'm here.
Yeah. You're only 1 minute late. We're good.
Yeah, I got a chance for background. I was talking to my son. I was trying to shovel. We got 5 inches of snow here. And
yeah, there you go. Of course. Mm-hmm. My goodness. Look, I'm Latin. These... So, you know, you get like a 45 minute window of on time. Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? Like, great. Nice to meet you, brother.
Yeah. Thanks. Who's all joining here?
Just me, you, and Nicole.
Okay. That's good. Let's
love
do it.
This
whenever,
background.
Whatever you want to do, you just. I got my Canadian Parliament here background here.
Oh, is that what that is? Oh, that's such a cool
they're
building.
Coming out with the UFO report in fall. Nicole,
that's
and
right.
We were involved in a meeting that with the Canadian government. We were sort of in the middle of it, and with Elizondo and Mellon and the boys, and they bailed out on us because we didn't want to do the scary aliens coming to eat us thing.
Who bailed on you? The Canadian government?
It wasn't actually Lou Elizondo. It was Mellon who said, as soon as he heard that the Canadians weren't going to do the threat thing, they were going to do a scientific investigation, he said, that's a poison pill, I'm gone. And Cahill and him and Elizondo, and that was it. It was game over. We're going to have a big deal. We're going to have 10 people, 10 members of parliament. We're going to be on a panel, and these guys were going to be like four experts, and these guys, these Canadian government people are going to ask them questions. And we wanted to put it on YouTube everywhere. Anybody could broadcast it. And that's when Cahill said, you're turning this into a big promo circus. And I said, well, you're damn right. That's what we're doing. Exactly. The whole idea is to get it out to as many people. And it's like,
I mean, that's a fair point. That's that is the whole idea. I concur with that. Wow. That's disappointing to hear.
Well, but we got the opportunity. We saw the inside. Like one of the guys that was in charge, like this Larry Maguire, was at Seoul. He had to gave the speech at Seoul. He was the main guy, and he was briefing 9 other parliamentary people, and it was his aide that we were dealing with, and we were on the call with the aide, and there was another aide for another parliamentary guy in the Canadian government, and this is all being set up. You know, who was going to be on the panel and how the questions would be asked, and they fought who was going to be the guest host. We're going to get Nicole will know, the name's escaping me, but they said, no, we don't want this guy. And so there's all these sort of trying to work this thing out, but it basically came down to, now this program is going to come out. What the deal is, the Canadians are going to put this program out, which is coming out in the fall, and it's the science advisor to the prime minister. So was sitting in the background on this thing. So this panel that we were going to do was going to be a cover. It was going to be a cover, and we were going to broadcast this thing, and that would give her the thing to say, oh, look, there's this interest, we should do a UFO study. But they wanted to do it. They just needed a cover. And that was what Nicole and I and Elizondo and all these people were going to do. And then because we didn't want to do the threat thing, we said, we got no military people who've, Canada, we're not into weapons, we're not into guns, we're not into, you know, fighting people and stuff like that. And we just said, well, we haven't got any military witnesses that are saying that they're threatening our airships and stuff like that. We want to do a scientific investigation. And then, nope, we're not doing that. It's like, game over, we're gone. And Gresh, that's what we heard about Gresh. Gresh was mentioned at that point. The Canadian said, oh, we'd like that guy from Colorado Springs. If you get that Dave guy from Colorado Springs, we'd like to talk to him again. That's when we learned about Gresh. That was August of 2022.
Oh, yeah. August 22. So that was a full year.
Yeah. And Nicole was there.
Came out.
Yeah. His name had kind of been whispered.
We just knew him as Dave from Colorado Springs. So when it became public, I looked it up because he was a real estate agent. Is Dave? And I looked up. Sure enough, it was Gresh. So they knew. Said, that guy's good. Who was the host that they didn't want, Nicole?
Well, they didn't want you to host it. They didn't want Dave Scott to host it. And the Canadian MPs wanted Kurt Jamungle to
Kurt
do
Jamungle
it.
Kurt Jamungle, yeah.
And then Lou and Cahill had kind of had something with Jamungle before, but they've made up since then. So that's all water under the bridge, because they've gone back on his show like 2 or 3 times now.
I don't think they had a dispute with me. I just didn't want to be a part of it. I wanted to sort of have an independent thing where I'm like you. I'm just going to poke the bear. I'm going to sit in the background. And
that's what you had said. You're too UFO. They said Dave Scott was like too Bigfoot. Jimmy Church was too
UFO. What does that even mean? He's too. You're too UFO. I don't know. I mean, that's crazy. That's weird.
But they're playing interesting. We're the cool guys. We're too cool for this kind of stuff. The same as like now with the, you know, everybody's into the nuts and bolts stuff. And, you know, Sheehan talked about the fact that when the contractors were there, they said, don't bring up the experiences. Can you make a deal? We don't bring up the experiences. I mean, people, it's just woo woo. We don't want to go there. We're looking for funding, and we need evil aliens that are, you know, trying to attack our ships and planes, and it's a threat. And they did that back in the 80s. John Alexander did that with the working group in the 80s. I've even just was scanning my documents, and I've got the document where he said the threat narrative. They're going to build a threat narrative, because until you got a threat narrative, you're not going to get any money. That's what Pandolfi says. There looks loons, crooks, and worse.
Interesting
that you run there. And Pandolfi described it as all these guys, like Putoff and all these guys, he said that they ran through all the billionaires and they ran out of billionaires, and now they're going after the government people for the money, and they're trying to run their experiments and fund their projects, and that's what it's all about. Because in the Leslie Kain days, when she did her book 2010, she said it was a threat to airline traffic, and I guess everybody just sort of laughed and said, "Get out of here." So that didn't work. So now they're doing the threat to the military and all this kind of stuff, and you got Congress running around, and how much money do you want? And everybody walks out with a suitcase full of money.
I mean, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but America works on that fear, right, in the government and getting funding through the NDAA, right, the National Defense Authorization Act. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me, but that's disappointing to hear. But it's good to know that the Canadian government is still going to move forward with something, right, and still going to look into this.
Well, they're going to put out some. I'm not sure what they're going to put out. I asked right at the beginning to get an interview with this science advisor, and they didn't do it. And I say that if you look at the Canadians ran a program from 1950 to 1954. And one of the top documents that nobody in the UFO field ever talks about is the top secret memo that Wilbur Smith wrote to the Department of Transport that said, "We were talking to American officials." This is November of 1950. "We were told the following things: flying saucers exist. The most highly classified subject in the United States. Small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush are trying to figure out what's going on. The subject is tremendous significance to the Americans, and we were asked, and we were also told that other things might be associated with the phenomena, such as mental phenomena. The Americans aren't doing very well because they said if we're working on it, they're willing to exchange credentials and talk to us." So in 1950, the Canadians knew mental phenomena was involved, which Lukatsky has now come out and said is a fact. They said it was the most highly classified secret in the United States. And so whether the Canadians are going to bring that up, I think they're going to try to walk around that story that the Canadians said in 1950, this thing's for real, and the Canadians knew it. And they're going to start from almost like the Americans. They're going to start from scratch. 2004.
Yeah.
Before 2004, when the Canadians had this thing all figured out. And the guy was running the program. The Canadians opened a base for UFOs to land. That's been confirmed. The head guy was dealing with an alien by the name of AFA. The U.S. intelligence was involved, CIA was involved, there was metal coming to Canada, there's all this whole story, and that probably the Canadians are going to walk around that because they don't want to get into the middle of this thing. They're just going to say, well, you know, it'd be a good idea to investigate UFOs, you should send them to these following agencies, and these are the people that are working on it, and do this sort of science thing where let's not get into the crazy weeds about people talking to aliens and stuff. Let's just count lights in the sky, which I say is a total waste of time to be sitting there and counting how many green ones and red ones, especially when you look at Lukatsky and his very important interview that he did a couple months back, where he said we had 200,000 cases in the OSAP database and every single one of them was different. And I say, if that's true, if every single UFO sighting is different, stop looking at UFO sightings. You're wasting your time. It's not going to get you anywhere to say, oh, it's a green one. We don't know how to build a flying saucer. You got to deal with the people who are dealing with the intelligence, or deal with the high level government people who have been working on this for years. And what we call the aviary, where a bunch of these guys are around. They've been around forever. They've been in all these different groups and they're trying to figure it out as well. And they figured out little bits and pieces of it. But just count lights in the sky. And I think this is what the Canadian government's going to do. They're going to do this sighting thing, which is, we've done this since 1947. Hasn't gotten us anywhere except to prove that, yeah, something's going on. But other than that, you cannot tell anything by watching stuff fly around in the sky.
Well, what was it when we were in our meeting? Remember the slideshow that was made that never got used? And there was a block. There was a block of known cases that they gave us, and it was from like 1950s all the way up to like 1969, and then there was like a 30-year gap where it like jumped, and I'm like, well, what about stuff in the 30-year gap? Yeah, like, let's fill that in with some, you know, Shag Harbor or something, which, you know, maybe those weren't necessarily cross data verified cases, but you know,
no, that's still asking, weird. That's still weird to have that gap.
Asking for known Canadian forward cases. So I just wondered why some were left out. So,
yeah, well, that's the thing. Grant, you mentioned something about the Canadian government had an alien Canada.
They were talking to an alien. They were talking to an alien. If you go back, there's a documentary. Now, which documentary is it in? 1975 documentary UFOs Past, Present, Future, which was redone as a documentary in 1979 called UFOs It Has Begun. And in there, you'll see a story that was given to my friend Bob Emmenager. He was given the Holman Air Force Base film, but the other story he was given was from Art Lundahl. So now I don't know how much you're up on all these the names, but Ron Pendolfi.
I've heard of Bob
Emmenager.
I hate saying the last name because at the end of it, I'm like going to say something racist. It sounds like.
So anyway,
so
he was approached by the CIA. And then people don't realize that the government is leaking this stuff. I've written 5 books on this. They're leaking stuff into the community, and it's this plausible deniability thing. You put it into Disney, you put it into Bob Emmenager doing documentary, and then you pull the film, and so he puts it out, and you can't confirm anything, which is what the intelligence is doing as well. They're not giving the whole thing. As soon as you get part of it, then they drop out, and you can never confirm the thing. So it's in this documentary where he's approached by Art Lundahl, who is the head of the first head of the weird desk at the CIA. He was the guy that analyzed all the film for the Robertson panel in the 1950s, ran the National Photographic Interpretation Center, which is the CIA building, one of the most highly classified buildings in Washington, which is where they analyze all the U-2, the SR-71, all the spy photographs come in. He's the guy that invented digital photography with satellites, where you take it in digital and then you enlarge it and you move the pixels around. He invented this whole thing. So he was big into UFOs. He was the first guy. And he goes to Bob Emmenager and he gives him this story from 1959, where there's two Navy intelligence and a CIA guy who go to see this woman by the name of Frances Swan in Elliott, Maine. And she's channeling this alien by the name of Alpha and an alien by the name of Ponar. And they're trying to figure out was this woman onto something? And she said, show you how to do it? And she takes the one guy, she sits in the chair, she puts her hand on his right shoulder inside the other, he starts channeling this alien. And then he's all excited. And he's from the CIA, goes running back to Art Lundahl at the National Photographic Interpretation Center. And this is done this documentary. This whole story is described in this documentary. This is a true story. So he goes back and Art Lundahl says, yeah, okay, great. Let's sit down. Let's talk to the alien. So they sit him down. And I remember Bob said he went to Art Lundahl. And he said, can you go on camera and tell the story? He said, no, I can't. I'm on duty. He said, what do you mean you're on duty? He said, I'm on duty. I can't tell the story. So they get Robert Friend, who's the head of Blue Book. And Robert Friend on this documentary tells the story. The guy sits down in the room. They get in contact with this alien and this guy channeling the alien. And Art Lundahl's asking the question. And there's all these CIA guys in the room. And they're asking him questions about, is there a preferred religion and this and that and all this sort of stuff. And he keeps doing all this stuff. And then Art Lundahl says, we'd like some proof. And then the guy goes from doing automatic writing to voice. And he said, what do you want? And he said, we'd like you to show yourself. And then the voice says, when? And he says, now. He said, go to the window. And this is in the documentary. So Friend goes to the window and he looks out and there's the Capitol. And this flying saucer in the middle of the day flies over past the window over top of the Capitol. And this is a story that's told by Robert Friend, who ran Blue Book, on this documentary. So the Canadians, it's the same alien the Canadians were involved with. The name was AFA. This is the one where the Canadians went, where Wilbur Smith goes to the Prime Minister of Canada. And he says, if you guys would try to quit shooting this thing down, I could get it to land. They said, okay, this is 1954, the same year that Eisenhower supposedly met with the beings at Edwards Air Force Base. And the same year that this aide to Prince Philip has this encounter with aliens in Great Britain, that they come to him, they want to talk to Prince Philip. And that same year, and so they open up the base at Suffield, Alberta, which is an army base, which is a top secret army base, has a no-fly zone, just like Area 51. They're doing all sorts of top secret experiments there and stuff. So they open the Suffield, Alberta for AFA to land. And so they make this agreement. And according to Wilbur Smith's wife, he died early, but she told me the story that Wilbur said that he would land it there. And the Canadian government, the prime minister was involved. The Department of Defense was involved. And so was the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Federal Police Force. And they had agreed that they would allow the thing to land. They wouldn't try to shoot it down. It would land at Suffield, Alberta. And then they wanted to guarantee that once they had talked to AFA, that he would be allowed to take off. And they couldn't get a guarantee from the prime minister. They could get from his cabinet. They got an agreement from the Department of Defense and from Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And then AFA said, okay, it's called off. And then Paul Hallier, who was the Minister of Defense, makes a speech in 1967. And he says, he's opening this UFO landing base. It's like a centennial project outside some town. They built some UFO landing base or whatever. He said, this isn't the first time we got a UFO landing base. We had one in 1954 and nothing ever landed there, for UFOs don't exist. So we started going after Paul Hallier in the 1970s. And we said, hey, Paul, how did the UFOs know to go to Suffield? How did they know to land at Suffield? There must have been a communication. And he said, well, I don't know where the files are. And they're in my, he's starting looking for the files. And he couldn't find the files. And he couldn't remember the guy that told him the story and stuff like that. So yeah, the Canadians opened this base in 1954 for a UFO to land. And this, whether the Canadians are going to tell the story, I doubt you're going to hear the Canadians telling these stories of stuff sure. that's openly on the record that happened in the 1950s.
Let me ask you a question real quick. So the beings weren't physical. They were coming through a person, a human being, right? Being channeled through. But then later showed themselves in a UFO.
They were physical beings. These were, Wilbur Smith was asked about the beings. He said they could pass on the street. They were smaller. They were passed on the street. I would know who they are, but you wouldn't. But they were physical beings, and they were in two crafts. They had names for these crafts, and this is 1954. And if you go, I'm putting.
Wait! They were physical beings, so they weren't, but they could also channel themselves through a human being.
Yeah.
As we all can.
I mean, so that's where they were using this Frances Swan to communicate. But in 1954, she said, "There's two crafts. They're in two crafts that are rotating around the Earth." And if you go to Aviation Week and Space Technology, you go to a lot of magazines in 1954, they found two objects rotating around the Earth. And they said, oh, they're natural planets. Well, if they're natural planets, they should still be going around the Earth. And this was a real story. There's a bunch of articles, New York Times, about these two objects flying around the Earth. And that's what she had said. They're in these crafts around the Earth. And they had all these messages. Wilbur Smith actually wrote a book called The New Science. And I may put some of them. I've got a couple of copies. There's maybe only a couple copies in the world. I think they only printed about 100 of them. And most of them went to the Scandinavian countries and Russia. And I've got a couple of copies. But this book is called The New Science. And it says right at the beginning of the book, it says, given to me by intelligence, more intelligence than us or higher than us. The whole book was channeled. It was all this mathematics, how the world works, how creation comes in, what the beings told him. So he had gotten all this material. And he was putting it out, and the Canadian government didn't accept any of this stuff. And as Wilbur Smith said, no government official is going to admit something that they don't have answers to. They're not going there. And so they basically,
because then they get more questions, right? Essentially. No, that makes sense. Look, Grant, I'm gonna have to have you on again and do like an epic 3-4 hour podcast. I love listening to you. I really do. You got a lot of information. You're spouting off dates and times. I can't even keep up with the notes here. I would love to have you back on. And I love this stuff. You kidding me? I'm all in. I love hearing this stuff. I just have so many questions. You've dropped so many bombs. I got like a bazillion questions. So I'm gonna have to have you on again to discuss, you know, your story, this stuff you're telling me. This is fascinating. Honestly, this is fascinating. Also, what I found fascinating is what you said about Kurt Jaimungal, who hosts Theories of Everything, that the Canadian government wanted him to lead this UFO. I don't know what you want to call it, a group, a panel, a movement of sorts. That's interesting. So now there's going to be nobody leading this thing. Right.
Well, this was just a promo to get out the fact that there's 10 Canadian members of parliament from all different parties. So we work a little bit different. We have a parliamentary system. So it wasn't really the government. The government is the Liberal Party and they run the whole show. The guy that was McGuire is in the opposition. So he has no power to do anything. That's why they said Mellon is saying, well, you form this committee and then you bring in all these military witnesses and it's a threat and all sorts of stuff. And then McGuire's aide is trying to say that it's not how it works. We don't have any power to spend money. We can't bring in stuff. The government runs the committees, so we can't do that. And so it was sort of the opposition, but there were some members of parliament, but it was just sort of a promo type thing to run cover for the science advisor so that she would have something to say, oh, look, we got all this demand.
Exactly.
And we'll do this kind of thing. They just don't want to come out on their own and say they're going to do it. But now McGuire had asked her and now she's coming out with this report. But the weird thing was that Wilbur Smith, the guy who was around the Canadian program, who wrote this top secret memo, who was getting all the material, and who actually saw the bodies. I interviewed his son. I've got on tape. His son's now dead, but his son said he had, right at the end of his life, in 1962, he died. He said, I went to my father, they couldn't touch my father anymore. So I asked him, did you see the bodies? There's a story that he saw the bodies in the crafts. He said, yes, I did. And he said, it was outside of Washington. So we're assuming Andrews Air Force Base or something like that. And the description was that the beings were smaller. The first question I asked the son is, I said, were they grays? He said, no. And that's what I say to people is this idea of projection, that there was no grays. I don't care what anybody says. There was no grays before 1961. There was aliens with bubble helmets, like right out of science fiction cartoons of the 1940s, but there was no grays.
You're saying it's a space helmet, not their actual head.
Yeah, space helmet. Right. So that's the thing. And then how many have space helmets now? They don't. That was 1940, 1950. That's when it was in all the cartoons and stuff. And it reflects, that's what Brandon Fugel says. And
what about Whitley Strieber's book, The Communion, right? Doesn't that have that typical
gray? Yeah, that was when there was Whitley Strieber in 75.
Or Strieber, sorry.
87. Betty
Barney Hill in the 60s. And a couple others that mentioned grays, but they really didn't.
Isn't Strieber in 80s? Wasn't he 85, 86? Yeah, 87. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought
too. The book out. I think 86 that happened, Christmas of 86. But if you take a look at those aliens, what you see is it's reflective. People say, oh, the grays. And I say, all you have to do, and I did it with a PowerPoint, you take the grays, you take Betty Hill's gray, put it on the screen, then flip Whitley Strieber's gray, then Betty Andreasen, who wrote 6 books on Betty Andreasen and her encounters with the grays, and then you look, and none of them look the same. They're not even close. Everybody's just assuming that they're all these grays, and it's this idea of reflectivity. That's what Brandon Fugel says. When you go onto the ranch, be careful, the phenomena is reflective. Whatever you take on the ranch is going to come back. And that's where I say, they say, oh, the skinwalkers followed these guys home. These guys were special forces guys. They were armed. They were out there and they were hunting the skinwalker. And the skinwalker says, oh, you want to play that game? Yeah. The phenomena is neutral. It says, you want to play skinwalker? Okay, we'll play skinwalker.
They
take this horrible thing, but it's their attitude, this sort of fear attitude. Because if you look at Chris Bledsoe's story, Bob McGuire and his wife go there and the hitchhiker follows them home and they get healed. So it's reflective of what you do. Whatever you put in is what you get out. And that's what happens in all these phenomena that we sort of think that there's this phenomena that's independent of it. It's not.
Sure.
We're part of the phenomena that we are engaging with. And that's where you see that 200,000 sightings and they're all different because we're part of the thing. We sort of think there's this thing and that, and then we start to see when you start looking closely at the sightings, you see like the ones I had 76, where these people are these kids are drinking at a reservoir, and this this Charlie Red Star thing that they're now going to do a 5-part series on comes over the reservoir, shoots this beam down into the reservoir, and this object appears under the water and it starts going towards them, and they're freaking out. They're having a big drinking party and they're freaking out, and they take a rock and they fire it at this thing as it comes right up to the deck, and the thing breaks into 5 pieces, and the 5 pieces go and they go back into where the beam of light is, go back together and go back into the ship and fly away. And you start seeing these bizarre things, that things are breaking into pieces, they're making triangles. And that's what I say is this whole theory of, wow, why do you have UFOs? People do sky watches. And they say the thing formed a triangle in the sky. Like what, it comes 10,000 light years to make triangles in the sky? Why do UFOs do 90 degree turns? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Why do you need to do a 90 degree turn? They know you're watching and they're just trying to influence your mind. And we're part of what it is. Because I'll ask people, did you see it? What was it doing? And they appeared to say the same thing. It wasn't doing anything. It was just sitting there, like Bud Hopkins. It was just sitting above the car as he's looking up in the daylight, this thing sitting there. And then it takes off like lightning. And I say, what do you need to take off like lightning? That happened with Brandon Fugel's first sighting. It took off like a bullet. Doom. Like, why does that have to take off? Like, would it suddenly realize it forgot the wife's dry cleaning and we got to get out of here? Yeah. It always does the same thing on the Nimitz photographs. It takes off at this high speed because they want you to go, holy cow, what the hell's going on here? They're trying to get your attention. They're trying to get you curious and in awe. And when you get curiosity and awe, you start to do investigations. As long as they don't get your attention, I call it like the Jesus thing. Why did, you know, if Jesus hadn't walked on water, fed 5,000 people and healed people, you never heard of the guy. You got
so they're showing off their powers, right? They got to show off their capabilities.
Yeah, you do the circus and then you put the message. You don't do the message. We do it backwards. We go in, we say, we're here.
How long have they been doing the circus, though? Like, when is the time for the message, right? Haven't they been doing this for thousands of years? Don't you think by now it's time to... And plus, generations come every 30, 40 years, right? So, like, you sort of miss out on all the people that you did the circus for. But the
messages are going to be different. So you're going to get, if you're in Ireland or something, you're going to get elves and fairies and leprechauns and stuff. It'll appear at whatever your culture phenomena is. Whereas sure. we're into the space.
I've heard this before.
Because now they're coming in as space guys. And, sure. And even I say people say, oh, it's extraterrestrial. And I say, really? You really think this is extraterrestrial? Go back to 1896. That's when the year we discovered radioactivity. It was 1896. Suddenly there's this massive 10,000 sightings of airships flying over the Western United States and over Europe. And these guys hanging down on ropes with beards and talking this riddle language and stuff like that and saying they're from Mars. And I say, do you seriously believe that this wooden ship with a propeller coming across and the one that crashed in 1897, if you go back and read the story, it hit the windmill and it crashed and the guy got buried in the yard there in Texas. It was moving at 8 to 10 miles an hour. And you start to realize like, this is a total bizarre story that if you believe, you can't believe that this thing flew through the vacuum of space on a wooden ship with these big lights on it from Mars. They're reflective of what we see. So what happens is we detonate the atomic bomb and they just appear in mass because it's all one thing. Everything in the universe is connected. Everything is the non-duality. So everything is connected. And it rang like a bell. And everybody knew the kids had the matches. And they had this, and they all appeared. So that's what the message is. So the message before 1947 would have been different as it was. They'd come as ghosts or whatever.
Sure.
And so that's always the thing is you got to realize that we're part of the whole story. We sort of think there's an independent phenomena out there. And not realizing that we're part of the phenomenon.
We're part of the, yeah. Well, look, that brings us to the topic of why I brought us all together and the questions that I have for you, Grant, which is this Tim Taylor gentleman, who I think potentially has this same idea about the phenomena that we're all a part of it. He's, able to communicate with it, I guess, through protocols and download information or ideas, however you want to look at it, and then implement those ideas. Now, I do want to address something real quick in this Zoom here. Mark had said something to me like, hey, I don't, Mark Olson, who we spoke with, right, who I spoke with through email, he said, I don't know if it's a good idea to talk about this guy with someone who doesn't have all the facts, right, referring to me. And I get that. I understand what he's saying. And what I explained to Nicole was, look, I'm American. I didn't actually realize Nicole was American either. But, our tax dollars were being used for stuff Tim Taylor was doing, under this guy. So that's why I feel it's okay to talk about him and what he's doing, is that he's made it public by using our tax dollars to do some of these studies. So that I'm not trying to be dox this guy or out somebody or, just come looking for nothing. I just think he seems like an important figure in this story that I keep hearing. He's dotted around in all these different places with all these different people and doing all these things. And it's not all adding up. And I'm just curious why. But the reason I think it's okay is just that fact that he's used public tax dollars. Okay, now we can talk about him publicly because of that. So I didn't want it to seem like I was coming from some, I don't know, gotcha place or, some sort of like inside edition.
I think
I'm going to bust this guy. It's not like that at all. I'm just curious, that's all it is. Sorry, Nicole, please go ahead.
I was going to say just his name has come up more and more since American Cosmic and Diana's really speaking out. And I think that's where really more people like me in the community that are more behind the scenes than like Grant, we hear the gossip and the chatter and things are shared in groups and that side of it. And I think there is this interest in the community to kind of protect these people that we hear have positions, but interest. And I think Tim has been treated like that for a long time, but since the Tyler D kind of did get dropped, to me that's kind of like open season in a way. So when I hear these little things like from years ago where he is interested and he's speaking with Grant and other researchers and finding out about the gifting field or looking into the San Augustine case further, to me it's always like, why would so-and-so approach this person if it's not eventually to send them on, this research or this quest or to give them a little hint or whatever it is. And that's kind of what I think Tim did with Grant at this gathering meeting. You know, they met, they didn't really know who each other was. They swapped some information. And now years later, pieces of this are starting to come out, you know, and not just from like the Tim Taylor side, it's the Chris Bledsoe stories coming out of it. You know, this adventure off in the desert that seems to have everybody confused. So yeah, nothing, it's not like a headhunt for Tim.
Yeah, Taylor, correct. Correct.
Like it is to.
I wanted to make that clear. And I'm going to do as part of this, right. I'll do my own separate intro to explain that further. Cause I definitely, you know, just a regular guy, just trying to find out what's going on.
But really, what Grant, we don't know how to do that editing thing. So he'll put this all together nicely, I think.
Of course.
I was going to ask you if it's okay if Grant and I could record the audio from this too, just for
I could send it to y'all too afterwards.
Okay, that'd be great.
No problem. It gives me separate audio for everybody if y'all want that, and it gives me audio where it connects everybody.
Yeah.
Video, y'all can share whatever you want, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
Let me make a point about this secrecy thing, which really annoys me, and I got in a lot of trouble over the years for leaking documents, the Wilson leak document that file of people were sitting on for 10 years and did damn nothing with it. And then I go public and then I suddenly find out all these people had this document and they just kept it to themselves. And my expression is, because I was raised very religious, I was supposed to be a minister. The expression was, what profit a man he gains the whole world and loses his own soul. What's the point of continually making names, Spider-Man and Batman and all this stuff? And I've gone after people like, oh, you can't release this woman's name. Some high level woman is dealing with Kit Green. And I go, what are you trying to turn her a secret source? This is nuts. Nobody's asking for anonymity. And we're turning everybody into the secret source thing. When I met Tim Taylor, number one, there was no secret thing. It was like, do not mention my name, nothing. It was just this guy. We had this discussion, very interesting discussion, whatever. I didn't even really know who he was at the time. And the importance of what he showed me, I didn't realize for years after that. So there was no secrecy thing there. And the second thing was, there's the story that's told by Chris Bledsoe. So Chris Bledsoe, Tim Taylor goes to see Chris Bledsoe. Chris Bledsoe says, what now people would be saying about me is, well, what are you outing these people for? Why are you talking? And Chris Bledsoe said to him, well, what are you doing on my property? Like, why are you intelligence guys? And the Navy, everybody was there, military, Pentagon, CIA, everybody, and his kids were getting, you know, his one kid left school, ran away from home. Kids were devastated by what was going on, all the attention, because they were in this Bible Belt place and they got thrown out of church and it was horrible. And he said, well, you're destroying my family. What are you doing here? And then Tim Taylor says to him, well, Chris, he says, you, it appears that they like you, Chris. It appears that they are interacting with you. Chris, they don't talk to us. They don't like us. Therefore, we're here to find out what are they telling you. It's the same thing. And I say, because I did the whole aviary story, which is, you're going to see a documentary coming out about this aviary thing. And I was the first to release their names back in the 1990s. These guys have been around. They're high level guys who are trying to figure
Rick
it out.
Rick Doty, like Hal Putoff, those guys, yeah, right?
All those guys. And I say, I don't care what you think about these guys, whether you like them, dislike them, listen carefully. These people know a little bit more than you and I. So I've watched these guys very carefully. Like every time Jack Vallée brings out a book, I go through the index. I look up Kit Green. What do you say about Kit Green? What do you say about Ron Pandolfi? And I try to post all these things because these guys are in the background, because I've dealt with NIDS back in the early, in 2000, 2001, 2002. And they were looking at everything. Bob Bigelow had hired all these high-level guys. That's how you do it. He had them, and he was paying them big-time money to come in six times a year, and he would pick their brains. So he had Kit Green, Hal Putoff, John Alexander. What do you do? If you got a multi-million-dollar budget, you bring these guys in, and you try to figure out what's going on. And that's the same thing I'm doing. And it's this idea that we're going to keep these secrets, and we're going to, you know, not disclose this, disclose that. And so it comes down to, you know, people who are trying to get patents. They're in behind and they don't want to release it, or they're talking
That's
about.
That's what Tim does too, right? Doesn't he file a lot of patents from.
He's got 40 patents. And he claims they're all
from the phenomena, right?
And that's why I talked to him. That was the big discussion I had with him.
But if he's telling Chris Bledsoe, hey, they don't talk to us, we, you know, they talk to you, we want to find out why, then how is he able to download this information through
protocols? He's talking to them, but it's about medical stuff. All his inventions are medical things. which I talked to him about.
So the phenomena will talk to him, but only about medical stuff? That seems odd.
Yeah, well, I mean, he has it at the inside. He has this thing about the pieces of metal and stuff where he puts the metals in Chris's hand.
I don't know if I buy that, to be honest. Just being honest, I don't buy that. Why would the phenomena only talk to him about medical stuff, and then the Bledsoes, the phenomena would talk
to him
about,
they know
everything.
Other stuff, but in terms of, like, they don't talk to me about medical stuff. They don't. I get downloads, but they don't. There's certain things that I'm sort of being given. But not
oh,
everything.
Man, gosh, we definitely got to have another interview, Grant.
And
I got
so many
questions for
you. That's why
you
follow these guys. So if you find out somebody's got some sort of contact, or that he's working in this lab, or that he's following Chris Bledsoe. When I talked to Chris Bledsoe and I interviewed him, I said, so what did Tim say about this? What did Tim say about that? Because I'm trying to find out. That's what happened to me. And I had my first sighting in 1975. I saw the object. I never thought I was going to see it. I was like, you buy the lottery ticket, you think you're going to win? Because this thing was seen there all the time. I went out, I thought we wouldn't see anything. And the thing flew right in front of the car. And I went, oh my God, it's like miracles. Like, there's actually miracles. There's actually things, these things happen. I couldn't believe that I got lucky to see the thing. And then the second night I saw it again. It was bouncing around the sky like a ping pong ball. Ding, ding, ding. And then it came flying by. And as it was flying away, I said, hey, it could be extraterrestrial. I'm going, that is so cool. And then it popped into my mind and said, well, what the hell is it doing? It's not doing anything. It was just flying along. We made a joke because I'm in Canada. We made the joke because American beer was like water. We said, oh, they're coming for beer. It's the Americans. The Americans are scaring away from missile styles. And they're coming here. They're picking up beer and they're going to go home because it didn't seem to be doing anything. So that to me is what I was talking to Tim about, was this whole idea of what I was getting, what he was getting, was this whole download experience, because I'd had the download experience, and he told me the story about his download when he got the first invention. If you read American Cosmic, there's this description of this invention that he gets, and it's in the Pentagon, and he gets brought to the Pentagon, and he thinks he's going to get this big award, and then there's one-star general or whatever gets up and says, oh, the hell happened to this idea, and they all point at Tim Taylor, and it's going, oh, I thought it was going to be a hero here. And it was this invention, and this was the one where he got it onto the space shuttle. He's an engineer. He wanted it on
the diffusing zero gravity.
That's the assumption. There's the details we really don't know. But he wanted. He told me he wanted it on the space shuttle, and they said no, that's not gonna work. Well, we're not putting it on there. And then he kept pushing. They wouldn't put it on the space shuttle. And then he said he got a scientist to sign off on it. They put it on the space shuttle, and it worked. And that was how it worked. And so.
And Tim told you this personally.
Yeah.
The story. At this gathering, this first time you met him at the gathering, right?
Yeah.
So he knew you did downloading yourself, right?
Tim
knew you did, or you told him.
That's what I was interested in. I was talking about the download experience. I didn't talk about UFOs or the gifting field. I didn't know he had been at the gifting field. I mean, Mark had taken him there. Maybe I knew, but it wasn't interesting that. I was interested in this download.
Wait a second, because this is the part that people get confused, and I'm probably even confused about. So what year was the gathering?
2013.
And Mark had already known Tim and gone to the field at that point?
2012, yes.
So they had gone the year before. But you knew Mark, but you didn't know Tim?
That's part I don't remember. I remember Tim coming. He was only there for a very short period of time. He came, I don't think he even stayed overnight. He was there for part of the day. And then he just sort of disappeared. I really didn't realize he was this high level guy until
you were just talking to him at this gathering, right?
I knew he had some stuff. I must have heard the gifting field story, but I really didn't. I don't remember talking about the gifting field. I talked to him about the download, and he put me in contact with an experiencer because that was the whole idea. He was doing the same thing. He said, oh, I got a woman who I'm following. And that's what he's doing with Chris Bledsoe. You go to people who've got contact with the phenomena and you say, hey, what's the phenomena telling you? And so Chris was keeping notes for him. And he even tells the story that he writes out for the generals in the Pentagon, that Chris writes out what the woman said, what the lady said, write it all out. And Tim's taking that. And Tim goes and gives this briefing to the president and all these rumored stories and stuff. And Chris gets the medal and there's all these weird things. And so when I'm there, I'm talking to him about this download thing. And that's when he tells me, he says, you know, Grant, he said, that idea came to me in the morning. He said, the last thing I remember the night before was a hooded figure standing at the end of the bed. And I said, really? Could you see its face? And he said, no, I couldn't see its face. Because the hooded figure, you can never see the face. And he said, no, I couldn't see the face. I said, oh, you should go to Yvonne Smith. Yvonne Smith does regressions because he goes to LA, he works with cancer kids. And I don't know what it is with these medical inventions he's got or whatever. And he's in Miami, and he's also at that time he was in flying to Los Angeles, and he's in operating rooms, and he's with the medical equipment and stuff like that. So I said, oh, you go to LA all the time. Yvonne Smith will regress you. And then you can ask who was the hooded figure. And he said, yeah, maybe I'll do that. And so that was a discussion I had with him. It was his
download. Wow, that's crazy.
And then he says to me, he says, oh, I've got a woman. I've got two girls that I'm following their experiences. And that's what you do. You follow their experiences. And one, sure. Her name is Connie. I won't really put her last name out right now. I've got a video that I think I put the audio. I haven't put the video out yet. But he says she lives near you. She used to live near you in Manitoba. And I said, really? I said, what town? She said, Steinbach. I said, Steinbach, man, that's like 35 miles from my city. And he said, we'd like to talk to her. And I said, well, yeah. And so he phones the first woman first. She's not home or something. I had to come out. But then he phones Connie. And then Connie's on the phone. I'm on Tim Taylor's cell phone. And I says, hey, you lived in Manitoba? And now she's in Florida. And she knew Edgar Mitchell. And so I got to know her. And it was the same thing because she was a contactee. She was getting these downloads. She would tell me these stories about things that she would see, premonitions. Mm-hmm. And I actually helped her.
I know Connie. I know who you're talking about now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Connie would get these downloads. And so Tim would say to her, write this down. So she'd be writing down all her downloads, the premonitions. And she gave me some of them. And a couple of them I found. One was a coal mine thing where she was underground. She was with the guys underground, and they're all still alive. And they sent this team in to rescue them. And the three rescuers die, and they shut down the thing. And she's down below with these people dying, and they end up dead. They never get them out. And then she had one with a train in China. She said, I can see the mountain, and there's this train on a high level track, and the one is coming. They're on the same track, and this train is hanging off the track. And I found both those, and I sent her those things and confirmed that these visions that she was having. And she said at one point the visions were so bad, she said, I can't take it anymore. She said to the phone, stop, I can't take this anymore. Shut it off. And they shut it off for a period of time. So Tim had her writing down all this different stuff. Your premonitions, all this kind of stuff. And he had this other woman. And that's what you do, is you go to the experiencers and you're trying to figure out who's the intelligence talking to, what are they saying, ask them this.
Do you think Tim was doing this under official business or just personal? And what do you think he was working with other people to do that and like reporting back to them? Does that make sense? Like taking back these reports from Connie, yourself, Chris? Well,
for all of them, for him, it's official, but it's also personal. He's trying to figure this thing out as well. And that's
what it is official as well. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. These aviary guys. I mean, that's the thing with the aviary guys.
Is Tim part of the aviary? He's not, right?
Well, he'd be part of the Cosmic Club. Like
they called, I think.
Cosmic Club. Is that a thing?
That's an old term for the same group of people.
The aviary.
I think what they kind of call themselves now is the new Invisible College. Like I've heard them reference.
I've heard that name too. So Tim is part of the Invisible College or the new Invisible College.
Or Richard Doty calls it the working group. He calls it the working group. He claims.
What do you think about? Look, I can only go till 8. I got to go pick up my nephews. They're the kids here, so I got 15 minutes. Again, I'll have to do this again. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize how awesome this would be, Grant. If I'm being honest, this is awesome, and I definitely got to talk to you more. But I want to make sure I clear up. Basically the confusion that we had, Nicole, in that Twitter space, right? Like, and Mark kind of helped me a little bit through the answers, but like, what do you know where did Tim Taylor actually find out about this crash site in New Mexico? And we're saying it's San Augustine, right? Not a Roswell.
Okay. Well, first thing you got to realize, there may be more than one site. I think if somebody mentioned like six sites, or maybe even Tim may have mentioned there was more than one site.
Diana did say that too. In her interview,
Diane Pastalka is talking about has a fence and they build the altars and they pray and all this kind of stuff before they go on. I heard the story from Mark Olson, who's a friend of mine here. She lives in the same city as me. And he told me the story. He goes to UFO Congress. So that Tim Taylor had gone to UFO Congress, and it was either in Phoenix or Laughlin, depending where it was in 2012. And Mark doesn't go to the lectures. He just goes to the people out in the hallway and what are you doing here? What's your story? And he met Tim Taylor. And then they were going on this dig. So he says to Tim, hey, we're going on this dig. You want to come on a UFO dig? And Tim says, yeah, okay. And he goes on the dig with Mark.
That's when Mark. and Gerald Anderson.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and Mark told me this story in an email. Okay.
And then it sort of differs between what I hear and what Mark is saying now. My impression.
Well, he told Diana, this is just what he told Diana, Tim Taylor, right? Yeah. Telling Diana that he had been running this crash site for decades. Like he was in charge of it, maintaining it. And it had been passed down. That's what Diana said in the Joe Rogan interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that story he tells in her book is that he just sort of got into it. That he had that experience where his friend gets killed on the shuttle, and then he gets brought in by these men in black. I don't think that was years and years ago. My impression
weird.
Was
why tell a different story right on Joe Rogan in front of million, the biggest podcast in the world. She said
okay, that may be
he
true.
Had been maintaining the site for decades, and then it had been passed to him from his family.
That could be.
So
that could be.
You know,
that could be. I she knows more about Tim Taylor than I do. I only
that would be interesting to then lie in the and be like, oh yeah, I'll go to that crash site, knowing you've been there and you maintain
it. May not be the same crash site. He went
that's
to a
fair.
Crash site, but
that's
as I said, there may be more than one crash site there, because the one that Mark never described, he described to me what happened at the site, and but he never described fences and altars and stuff, and that's why he's maybe not that open about what, because he doesn't remember what Tim told him. It was more
so Tim may have this site that he's been maintaining
sites,
and whatever,
yeah.
And then the other site that he went with Mark and Gerald is a different site potentially.
Yeah, it seems that there may be, because Mark never described any fences or altars and stuff like that.
Sure.
So then he described it to me, and then he gave me the photograph. So I've got the photographs of the site that Tim and Mark went to, and then the pieces of metal. And I've actually still got a piece of metal with me. Mark had a piece of metal that he was given, and then he gave it to me, and he said, "Oh, you can have the piece of metal." And
you have a piece of the metal from this crash site?
Yeah.
Is it like right next to you? Can you show it or no? I don't know.
Hang on.
Put you on the spot here.
Nicole, you talk for a second.
Okay. You go find your piece.
And what about that picture too? I don't want to pressure, but is there any way we could see that picture or no? I don't know. I don't want to.
I will say this about the site too. What if Tim had known Gerald for a couple years at that time? Gerald has done tours and taken people to the St. Augustine site and, you know, maintained it. You know, maybe that's some sort of telephone confusion there. Like, you know, I'm in touch with the guy who's been, you know, with
you know what, as you're saying that, Nicole, that makes total sense, because exactly
does.
What Tim is saying to Diana sounds exactly like Gerald's story, almost like he adopted it.
Yeah, I think you need to just do a full-blown interview with Gerald Anderson. I mean, I know he speaks to people. He's not closeted about this anymore now that people had started talking about it in 1991. But, you know, he saw that crash when he was 6 years old.
His story is fascinating. Absolutely. I mean, his story is fascinating.
And he can probably fill in this gap of when he took Tim Taylor out there.
I definitely want to talk to him and Chris Bledsoe, and just to hear their full story, to be honest, regardless of the site and all that stuff. I, you know, same with Grant, right? With you, Grant, I want to talk to you more about other than this. Like, I don't want you to think, oh, this is all I want. No, you're fascinating. Your story's fascinating. Like, this is awesome. So yes, I'm sorry,
it
Grant.
It was
please.
My fault. I stirred up the Twitterverse this.
Way to go, Nicole. Way to go.
It's what I do.
So I've only got a little piece. I can't find it in the drawer here, but I've got the piece before it was cut. I've got a photograph of the piece before it was cut. It took a bunch. And then Mark lost the piece, and I've luckily I cut a piece off it, so I've still got the little piece. But it's
Mark lost a piece of a UFO.
I don't know what he did. And then there was other photographs. There's a bunch of photographs of material.
Honey, have you seen my UFO crash piece anywhere? Yeah. Is it in the cushions of the couch here?
Right.
So I had the photographs of the site and then the pieces of metal. So there was the one that Mark took back, and then there was the piece of metal that I'm pretty sure I showed Chris. And this is
Mark told me he didn't take any pieces from there. He said that he was given a piece before going to the crash site. He was given a piece of it before going, but he never took any pieces himself.
Mark. You're talking Mark.
Mark said that. Yeah, Mark told me
but
that.
But he's got these photographs. So the piece that he had, he was given or whatever happened, but he had the piece. I was able to cut a piece off, give it back to him, and then he lost his piece. I've still got my piece. But it's just a
I'm glad you didn't lose yours.
Anyway, So then there was a piece that had the metal that I've shown, I put on numerous times on the internet.
There's
a piece that's a big sort of piece that has a triangle and a circle. And I'm pretty sure I talked to Chris about it one time.
I have it. I'll send it to you too. I have it saved.
You cut this off of yourself, like you personally?
No, these are photographs that Mark took at the site.
No, and but I'm saying you said you cut a piece off of Mark's piece to have your own piece, right? How did you cut it? Like with what? Like a knife?
A hacksaw. Didn't have any.
Oh, okay. So a hacksaw. Oh, interesting.
It was kind of weird. It had a sort of a.
Were you
weird
scared
pattern.
To do that? Like cut into it a little bit? Did that?
No, because either I don't get a piece. He said he wanted the piece back, but you can cut a piece off. I said, great. Man. Piece off.
I mean, I feel you. I would have done the same thing. I'm just saying, you know, it could be an extraterrestrial, well, not or ET, whatever word you want to use. You know,
but the thing is that my take on this
explodes.
On the metals is a waste of time, like the sightings. In fact, there's messages from the intelligence that says the technology is a trap. Don't go down that, because it's like people get the, like Tom DeLong had the layered piece of metal. We're gonna build a flying saucer. It's like
you
think that they flew 10,000 light years across and then pieces started falling off the flying saucer. Give your head a good shake. They're dropping this stuff. They're doing it on purpose. I even talked to Hal Putoff. I said, Hal, this is apportations. They're dropping this stuff because the same thing happened when he had Uri Geller in the lab. Suddenly Uri Geller bites into ice cream and he's got a pin and he pulls the pin out and Edgar Mitchell says, hey, where'd you get that from? That's my flight pin. I lost that 2 years ago. And then they're in the lab and they're in the lab with Hal Putoff and Edgar Mitchell. And they're standing there and Uri Geller's in the other room and this thing, dink, falls in behind them. It's the back half of the flight pin. And so I said to Hal, you know about apportations, that they drop this stuff. Even the Nolan piece with the Ubatuba piece, part of it is got the isotopes all messed up, and the other part of the piece is normal. They're having a joke. They're just getting your attention. They're going, oh my, look at these pieces. No two pieces are the same. Like no two UFOs are the same. They're just dropping this stuff. Nobody's going to build a flying saucer from a piece of metal. So I've never really been. I've got three pieces of metal that were given to me, and whether they're pieces of metal or whatever, I just think that's kind of a trap.
Grant,
where you
when
think
you
that,
put it in perspective, though, of you take a hacksaw and cut this piece off. And you have people like Tom DeLong paying $35,000 for a piece that Linda has that she keeps in the secure vault building.
Oh, wow. There we go. Bam. Oh, look, there you go. There you go. Oh, wow. So you cut that, you're saying yourself. Yeah. Boom.
And it has a pattern on the one side. I don't know if you can see it. There's a pattern.
Yeah, I could see some sort of
there's a pattern
something.
On the one side.
And the other side is smooth. You're right. The other side is pretty smooth.
So that was a piece. There was about three different pieces.
So real quick, just to be clear, that is allegedly a piece from a crashed UFO. Well, yeah, it's a crash site. So it's supposed to be
it's from
the crash site, right?
It's from that site, the site. And this guy had a booth at UFO Congress. It wasn't an open. He was showing pieces that he had recovered there, and he had a booth and stuff like that.
This
and then
Gerald,
they were going on
right?
a dig. Like people go for sky watches. This guy went on a dig, and Mark and Tim Taylor went on this dig, and he thought, oh, this is pretty cool. And my impression was that Tim said, Mark says he doesn't remember that, but my impression was that Tim said, hey, this is a real deal. He was really excited after he saw some of these pieces. It wasn't like he went out there and it's like, oh, this is just garbage. You guys are missing the boat or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
Mark said Mark said Tim filmed Gerald telling the story and everything there, like at the site.
And I've got a picture of Tim Taylor with Anderson at the site from Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I don't
that's
know
what happened. Tim went there.
If there's any way for me to get that picture, that would be awesome. If not, I mean, no pressure. I'm not trying to, I don't know if that's something you're trying to make public.
I've got a book
or...
coming out. I'm going to put the Tim Taylor picture in the book. I'm trying to get Mark to give me a good
when's
a good
that
copy,
book when's that book coming out?
I got two.
Editing it.
Yeah.
Like this year, it'll come out this year.
Well, it's ready. It's just we're waiting for an edit from Nicole. Then it's two books. It's Beyond Managing Magic, and then Beyond Managing Magic Landing the Plane. And then Nicole and I got into another one, which is going to be another book. They're about to drop a whole mess of stuff, and Nicole's involved.
I'll work on the title for that one. Working title.
But man, I got to see
this
picture.
A massive move by the government to drop some stuff, and Nicole's involved. I'm involved. There's a Canadian film producer involved. And
this sounds awesome. Grant, let's definitely set up another, because I want to talk to you about your books, the stuff you got coming out. Like really, for real, you know, let's get into that and.
You'll
so because I've only got a few minutes left here, so you know, my schedule is super flexible, so I will completely bend over backwards to fill, make sure I around y'all's time and whatever day y'all can do another, and I'll make sure to set aside a few hours if you want, we can just go to town, because you are fascinating to listen to, Grant. I have to admit, I get it now. So yeah, dude, you are awesome.
Did I answer your questions on Tim Taylor? I mean,
pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, you did. And you gave me a lot more information. I learned a lot from you, Grant.
Then we got to get into the story about Tim Taylor telling me about the jump room at LAX.
Yes. Okay. We are definitely going to do another one here. I'll send out another email. We'll figure out another day and time. Again, my schedule is very open. Just my nephews, I got to go pick them up. Like, you know, they're kids. I got to go get them. I got to help my brother out. He's single dad. Mom's not around.
Yeah.
So
I
help out my nephews
I'm
a lot.
I don't have a life. This is what I do for.
I'll help
this this is what I do too. This is what I do too.
Overloaded you with some information, but I'll
help
you.
You can never overload me. I love all this stuff. I'm in it. This is awesome. This was absolutely fascinating. This hour flew by. It just flew by. I cannot believe it's
and then
been
and the next time we pushed Nicole, that's who she's talking to, because she this is a pretty big story. This is what Nicole and I are involved in. I'm telling you,
I believe it.
The biggest story you may hear in a number of years.
Just what you said about the meetings you had with Elizondo and Mellon and right, that's a huge story.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's slowly coming out to you. Yep.
Very interesting.
I'll be happy to help.
Thank you guys so much.
We send paparazzi to McDonald's and golf courses. So all right, guys.
Okay, thanks. It was a pleasure.
That's fine. No, thank you guys so much. I'll reach out again and we'll do this. So thank you guys again so much. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, okay. Nicole. Thanks, Grant.
Anytime.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Patrick.
Bye.
Bye.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.